The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hernco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hernco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hernco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hernco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you! Ha, 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 ha!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
flee. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
All right. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And now, boy wonder, you can hang out here if you'd like. We are in radio mode, my friend. This is the Politics Cafe. We're broadcasting from Berkshire County, Massachusetts, and a remote island in Hawaii, all at the same time. Just a second. Folks got a lot of crazy things going on here. I want to apologize to everyone for being down the last couple of weeks. It was not an easy time for me. Voice is finally coming back. As you all know, I play and sing in a band also. And had a producer show up and monkey with my dials on the microphone a few weeks ago. And I ended up stretching my voice very hard just trying to hear myself while I was singing. And damned if I didn't rip the hell out of my throat and voice. Vocal cords and all of it. Finally, it's coming back around. Yes, I am looking for another singer for the band. Anyone anyone who would feel qualified to come and sing in a rock and ska band, feel free to contact me right here at the show. It's politicscafe at gmail.com. Love to hear from you. yeah, that's for sure. Should never let anybody else do this. Well, this guy, he claimed to be a producer and blah, blah, blah. You know, not a bad guy, but it just didn't do me any bit of good at all. At any rate, folks, got a lot of crazy things going on in the news here. A few things we've missed over the last couple of weeks. As you all know, Scott Brown got elected up here in Massachusetts, sending a signal and reverberating throughout Congress with what's going on out there. And you got to love it. They're all taking another look. I don't know. Barack Obama actually had a meeting with the House Republicans over the last couple of days here, which nothing at all got accomplished. You know, somehow or another, it's being portrayed out here that we're not getting any forward motion at all from the government because of the Republicans blocking things up. Well, thank God for that is all I can say at this point in time. I don't need the government helping me anymore. The government's been helping me enough. It's insane everything that's going on out there. You know, it was Ronald Reagan who once said, "Scariest sound in the world." You know, he said, "Hi, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you." And he's absolutely right, because we are looking at right now a budget that is about to go nuts. Okay, this by Martin Kreutzinger down of the AP here today. President Barack Obama sent Congress a $3.83 trillion budget today that would pour more money into the fight against high unemployment, boost taxes on the wealthy and free spending for a wide swath of government programs. The deficit for this year would surge to a record-breaking $1.56 trillion, topping last year's then unprecedented $1.41 trillion gap. The deficit would remain above $1 trillion in 2011 until the president. Although the president proposed to institute a three-year budget freeze on a variety of programs outside of the military and homeland security, as well as increasing taxes on energy producers and families making more than $250,000. Echoing the pledge in his State of the Union address to make job creation his top priority, Obama put forward a budget that included a $100 billion jobs measure that would provide tax breaks to encourage businesses to boost hiring, as well as increased government spending on infrastructure and energy projects. He called for fast congressional action to speed relief to the 1930s. After a protracted battle on health care dominated his first year in Democratic election defeats, the administration hopes its new budget will convince Americans the president is focused on fixing the economy. You gotta love it. I don't know how he plans on convincing of this. Because let's face it, folks, what's he doing here? You know, what were the key words in here? Oh, raising taxes. Now, granted, at this point in time, all they're really talking about is Bush's tax cuts expiring and being allowed to expire. But increasing taxes on energy producers, all right, that just hurts all of us. It has always never done anything but hurt all of us. You know, the energy producers, like all corporations, like taxes that go on corporations and whatnot, they filter down to those who are the customers of the corporations. Energy producers, we are their customers. That tax will get passed on to us. Will come in the form of higher prices for everything. Families making more than $250,000, well, who was that? Well, let's face it, that is our employers out there, folks. And that $250,000 line, that's a fine line there. There are other things that are going to go up along with that. Some of these taxes have already gone up. Cap and plenty of craziness to go on out there. At any rate, Republicans complained about Obama's proposed tax increases and said the huge projected deficits show he had failed to get government spending under control. But administration officials argued that Obama inherited a deficit that was already topping $1 trillion when he took office. And given the severity of the downturn, which was brought on by them, the president had to spend billions of dollars stabilizing the financial system and jump-starting growth. Well, he hasn't jump-started in any growth. And stabilizing the financial system? Well, I ain't too sure about that either. I mean, we're looking at the head of Goldman Sachs, and I can't remember his name, but he's looking at taking himself a $100 million bonus because they came out with $3 billion in profits. Isn't that a lovely thing? The rest of the world's having a hard time struggling trying to make it around here, but somehow or another, Goldman Sachs, you know, by virtue of all of its paper pushing and paper selling and paper promises and every other goddamn thing, is making $3 billion in profit. It's, we could be seeing too big to fail here, boy wonder. That could be exactly what we're looking at. Well, see, the thing about it is these guys have gotten so big, and the government is so entrenched with them, that if they fail, well, the government feels as if it's going to go down without it. Now, why the government ever got in bed with these people to begin with? Well, let's face it, it's pretty easy to say. It was their re-election guarantees. Pretty damn simple. Where'd the money come from to elect these people? Where'd their advertising dollars come from? And it was funny, anybody hear the State of the Union address last week? You know, where the Supreme Court, where Obama chided the Supreme Court for overturning 100-year-old election laws, now allowing corporations to donate to elections. Now, let's face it, that had been going on before. It didn't really hold itself up. It just went underground there for a couple of years. And now it's going to be back out in the open. Well, fact of the matter is here, there will be a lot more ads that will be running a lot closer to the election cycle. A lot of things that were blocked out of the last one in the last 60 days beforehand may have made the difference between this administration and perhaps an alternate administration being elected. In crisis, I'm not going to say that the alternate administration would have been any better. But fact of the matter is here, it was nothing more than an abridgment on free speech. And I don't know why the hell somebody would want to vote on an abridgment of free speech. It just doesn't bode well for anybody the way I look at it. At any rate, Obama's job proposals would push government spending in 2010 to $3.72 trillion, up 5.7% from last year. Obama's blueprint for the 2011 budget year, which begins the 1st of October, would increase spending further to $3.83 trillion, 3% higher than projected for this year. Much of the spending surge over the past 2 years reflects the cost of the $787 billion economic stimulus measure that Congress passed in February 2009 to deal with the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. The surge in the deficits reflects not only the increased spending, but also a big drop in tax revenues, reflecting the 7.2 million people who have lost jobs since the recession began and weaker corporate tax receipts. Having steered the economy back from the brink of depression, the administration is committed to moving the nation from a recession to recovery by sparking job creation to get millions of Americans back to work, the administration said in a statement accompanying its budget. Now, this is all hocus. This article goes on and on. Maybe some of the libs will like a little bit. It goes on here later on that they're grounding NASA, basically. No more moon missions for some time. He's cutting them down. I think it's like $5.4 billion or something along that line. But it's a, you know, it's just a no-nonsense move just to appease some of the left. Says, we could put a man on the moon, but we can't feed people here. It's just insane. It's, at any rate, all of this, and it's all of this depend around one thing, all right, and that is a huge leap of faith on growth, and that is the part that's getting us here. Now, folks, I'm here to tell you, there is no way in hell you could say that we are an economy that is growing if our tax receipts are shrinking. Now, you'll note, you know, long-time listeners of the show, well, you know, you'll hear me come in here and tell you when I can get information on how much the tax receipts are. Let me tell you something. July of last year was the last time I was able to find anything on it. And tax receipts at that point in time were off 20%. Now, they're sitting here trying to tell us now that the economy grew, 3%? When somehow or another, our tax receipts are off 20%. Look, they tax the economy. I mean, it's that simple. When you get down and you take a look at where the tax revenues are coming from, they are taxing the economy. They're taxing people's paychecks. They're taxing profits. They're taxing this. They're taxing that. If the tax revenues are down, right, it just goes stands to reason that business and the economy itself is down. You know, we are getting to a point here where we just have no idea whatsoever what is going on in there. The abuse of information that is coming out of there and the profusion of information that you just cannot trust anymore is really leading people down the wrong path. It's and leaving you in wonder. That's the worst part, because everybody's standing around just wondering what the hell is going on here. At any rate, this one by, this article is from the Newsmax.com. And it appears to be unauthored. Actually, it's down off the AP. President Barack Obama's proposed budget relies on a commission without teeth to help his administration wrestle the deficit out of the danger zone. It forecasts stronger economic growth than most economists expect and calls on Congress to cut programs that lawmakers cherish. All budgets from the White House are leaps of faith of some sort, and this one's no exception. The economic forecasts used in setting spending priorities are in line with independent expectations for now. After that, though, the administration's projections appear ever more fanciful. A look at some budget assumptions and how they compare with the facts and political realities. Now, the budget forecasts the budget actually forecasts 4 years of growth of 4% or more and unemployment dropping to 8.2% in 2012. Now, the fact is, no one knows what will happen, but the administration's projections are rosier than private economists expected. For 2010, the administration is projecting that the overall economy, as measured by the gross domestic product, will grow at an annual rate of 3% when measured from the fourth quarter of last year. Now, that is very close to the 2.9% GDP growth forecast from economists surveyed by the Blue Chip Economic Indicators. However, the administration is projecting that growth in 2011 will jump to 4.3% and remain above at 4% plus for 3 years, a scenario that is much stronger than the forecast of private analysts. The blue chip consensus is for growth to be more than a percentage point lower in 2000, 2011 at around 3.1%. Now, likewise, the administration's projection that unemployment, currently 10%, will end the year around 9.8% is in line with the outlook of most private economists. Many are looking for the jobless rate to peak at about 10.5% this summer and then gradually decline as the recovery gains strength. However, for next year, the administration is projecting the jobless rate will drop to an average of 9.2%, will average 8.2% in 2012, the presidential election year. That's what they're going to try. Many private economists don't believe the jobless rate will improve that quickly, given all the headwinds. Stronger economic growth and more people working translates into more revenues for the government and less spending in such areas as unemployment insurance, and thus a smaller budget deficit. However, private economists reviewing the administration's forecasts said the actual track for the economy is likely to be more sluggish, making future deficits already expected to be huge even larger. And it goes on and on and on with more of their explanations and more baffling information designed to baffle you, awe you, and keep you in the position of waiting to see what happens next. Well, it can't be right. I mean, you know, it's like this, Pox. It's not so much that I'm saying that the data is lying because it disagrees with my ideology here. But the fact of the matter is, there's no way of looking at the data anymore. The data has been skewed so far beyond any sense of reality that, you know, how do you look at it and project anything? How can you turn around and tell me that we've got a 3% growth in the overall economy when you've got unemployment up to 10%? And on top of that, you got tax revenues that have fallen off 20%. How can you say that? How can the economy grow 3% and the tax revenues fall 20%? You know, it's like inflation. Everybody's saying, well, inflation is still being kept at a low. Now, you can look at this in one of two ways. Either you have a deflationary spiral occurring in some sectors, which would be keeping it down, which is coming along with the inflation that we're seeing in other sectors. Or you can take a look at the fact that the CPI has been so radically changed away from anything that you're looking at in reality that it's nonsense. You know, anybody that's doing any grocery shopping these days for themselves or for a family is feeling the impact. You know, it's that simple. I mean, I'm looking at, it was like I said, at Christmas time here. You know, we've always had 20, 25-pound turkeys. Well, this year I got a 20-pound turkey. It was over $50. All right? Groceries have just been insane. I took my daughter shopping last night. And, for all stuff for her small family there, you know, my grandson. And, the poor kid didn't have three-quarters of a basket of groceries. And it was almost $200. You know, she turns around and says, "Why about it?" Realizes what's going on here, but the fact of the matter is, your dollar isn't stretching anywhere. Now, these guys are looking at this growth in the economy, and I'll tell you what, as being actually, according to them, just a growth in the money supply. They figure if there's that much money out there, it's got to start stimulating something somewhere. But how are you planning on stimulating something with no gauge on stimulating it, other than doing what? You know, other than just throwing more money out there, making more loans available. Have you made it any easier to do business? Have you cut any regulations back anywhere? Well, no. You know, are you making it attractive for people to go into business? Well, no. When you're rolling back tax cuts, that's not exactly pretty much the opposite of that, wouldn't you say? So the fact of the matter is, other than making money cheaper and more available, what steps are they actually taking to get things moving? Pox, you seem awful optimistic here, and you are a very optimistic guy. Why don't you jump up to the mic here and give us some reasons for optimism? Tell me something, my friend, Mr. Pox. Do you believe that that the economy will grow? And if so, why is that? Care to jump up to the mic and pop in here? Actually, we got someone else wants to take his hand up here. Mr. Nazer, go right ahead. Nasser, whatever your name is there, buddy, you got your hand up if you would like. Okay, I see. You're just putting your hand up for sake. Yes, okay. Yes, Nasser. All right, well, thank you very much. I was thinking maybe you want to take the microphone there, but that's fine. You know, welcome to hear from Egypt. Box, you care to weigh in on this situation, or you want to silently text behind the scenes there? It's up to you, my friend. If you want, the mic is open right there. At any rate, you know, the point that I'm trying to make here is, look, where are we going with all this? You know, do you see any more jobs creating anywhere? Last week, part of the things happened in the news, we had over 900 car dealers in this country who are now loudly protesting their dealerships being closed down. We'd like them kept open and would like to have some of this money that is going into the recovery shipped in their directions. I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, I look at the area that I held one close to 10 car dealerships. It's down to 2 now. You know, just the 2. All right, Mr. Nasser from Egypt. Weigh in here. Yeah, go ahead. Let's see if you keep it on topic or we're going somewhere else.
Assalamu alaikum. Bibi Zella, welcome. Welcome in Egypt. I am a Muslim. I am not standing you. Thank you. Take some.
Well, sounds like there's a wild time in the middle of the night in Egypt out there. Yeah, welcome aboard here. This is the Politics Cafe. It's actually a small show that we're doing here that is broadcasting out over the internet and around the world. So glad to hear that people from Egypt are listening in. Yes. All right, but getting back to the budget, getting back to everything else that's going on here, and of course there are other things in the news here that you really got to love. Now, bet everybody didn't know this one. Obama's actually got a budget plan B up his sleeve. Now, this is by Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar, also down off the Associated Press tonight. President Barack Obama's modest health care budget may be a harbinger of what's ahead if its overhaul plan dies in Congress. Now, the budget released today contains a lot of respectable ideas to squeeze savings, expand coverage, and improve quality, but no ambitious change that launches the nation on a path to health care for all. It doesn't change dramatically the cost trajectory or fill the coverage gap, said Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. With budget busting rates, the $915 billion health spending plan for 2011 would hire more fraud detectives to root out waste and outright thievery in Medicare and Medicaid, the two giant insurance programs for seniors and the poor. The budget would increase spending in one major anti-fraud area by 80%, part of a strategy the administration estimates could save taxpayers $10 billion over 10 years. Now, as unemployment remains high and people continue to lose jobs with health insurance, the budget provides an emergency infusion of $25.5 billion to help state Medicaid programs cope with swelling enrollment in a period of slack revenues. It would also pump another $290 million to community health centers, frontline medical providers for many of the nearly 50 million uninsured. As for quality improvements, the budget would start a host of experiments on how to improve care for seniors with multiple chronic health problems to account for a disproportionate share of what Medicare spends annually. It also would provide a funding boost for a new field of research that aims to determine which medical treatments are most effective for the costliest conditions. Speeding the adoption of computerized medical records is another priority. All in all, Sebelius called the budget a platform, a beginning, not an end. She said she hopes lawmakers will revive the health care bill sidelined after Democrats lost their 60-seat majority in the Senate and undisputed control of the congressional agenda. I think we need both, she said. The health care overhaul legislation would provide coverage to more than 30 million now uninsured. It wouldn't add to the federal deficit, so it says, but it would increase health care spending as people use their new coverage. However, in the long run, some of the cost control measures would slow the pace of annual increases, offering the promise of savings. Of course, they're not going to explain how that's going to do that. Fact of the matter is, health care is going up, as part of the rate of inflation. Make no bones about that, folks. And that's part of what I was talking about here before when I was talking about inflation. Look, healthcare being one of those huge things that is you know, climbing wildly out of control. And it's for many, many, many different reasons. But the biggest reason, of course, is going to be because the money has gotten so damn cheap and so plentiful, you know, in certain areas. This is what happens. All right, the money becomes worth less. Everybody needs more of it to do what they were doing before. So you're expecting that all the sex jobs, you know, without giving a reason for jobs, well, sorry, but wrong. That's it just ain't going to work out that way. It never has, never will in the future. It's insanity. But at any rate, nice to see that Obama's got a plan B up his sleeve here, isn't it? Just a wonderful thing. Now, according to some of this that's coming in here, the National Institutes of Health will get an additional $1 billion for research into such fields as genetic medicine that could produce breakthrough drugs and treatments. Right. Okay, but it could. All right. Administration priorities include cancer and autism research. Now, the Food and Drug Administration's budget for food safety cut under President George W. Bush, yeah, right, gets a 30%, $327 million boost. And revenues from a tax hike that Obama signed into law last year will be pumped into a campaign to prevent teens from taking up the habit. Finally, there's also a $383 million health care hit in the budget. Obama is proposing to eliminate congressional earmarks for building hospitals and other facilities, including $10 million for Alaska and $35 million for Mississippi. Let's parse all this out here a little bit. Where are the jobs that are going to be created going to? Well, they're going to be into the detective division of Medicare fraud. And it's going to be a wonderful thing because these people here will have no problems whatsoever justifying how government bureaucrats work when they're designed to oversee a system in the private sector. You know, the whole MO out there, which has always been and always will be, is to, look, start a bureaucracy up that is designed to oversee it, especially in places that are taking money from you. Now, which every healthcare facility in this country is taking money from Medicaid or Medicare or some other government assistance program, what they have on board is a raft or a slew of bureaucrats who are designed to go around and make sure that everything is running smoothly. Now, if everything is running smoothly and up to snuff, these bureaucrats have then put themselves basically out of a job. I mean, let's face it. If everything was running along smoothly, the bureaucrats come in, they look at everything, and everything's fine. The last thing they want to do is come back and tell their boss, well, everything's okay. Oh, no need for this, no need for that, because you're basically going and telling your boss, hey, there's no need for you and your job. You know, the job that was being handled by 50 people last year, this year. Well, no bureaucracy in hell is ever going to allow that to happen. Okay? Now, so what they do is they go right out there and they make sure they find millions of discrepancies in what's going on out there. Now, here's the beautiful thing about working for the government in one of these plants. All right? This is not like it's a criminal thing. It's not like it's criminal law or anything else. Okay? The innocent until proven guilty gets thrown right out the window. At this point in time, you become guilty until proven innocent. And should they find a discrepancy, you have got to prove them wrong. They don't have to prove their discrepancy wrong. And as a result, what they do is they keep the administration of healthcare facilities jumping on a regular basis. And that's exactly what's going to happen here with all these people that he's hiring here for the detective division. Count on it. What you will see are a slew or a whole raft of new bureaucrats who are going to be doing nothing more than going around and accusing people of Medicare fraud, accusing doctors of it, accusing whoever, healthcare facilities, what have you, going through everything, questioning this, questioning that. These people will have no problem justifying their existence. Obama will jump up and down and say, see, I created jobs, and the Democrats will be happy because they're also helping to, quote unquote, take care of health care for the American people. Tell you what, folks, the longer this administration is in there, it's just a closer and closer it looks to communist China or Nazi Germany on a daily basis. You know, just unbelievable. At any rate, we're at the bottom of the hour here. Time for me to take a short break. Folks, you are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com, the best in internet radio. We will be right back. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com, the best in internet talk radio. All right, listen, during the break here, we had a conversation got started here by Mr. Boy Wonder, and it sounded very interesting, but I would like, if he could, to come back up to the mic, and please, I didn't want you to blow your whole load right there while we were on standby, but I started over again because you were definitely headed down a path of some interest right there. So, Boy Wonder, stop right back up there and take the mic. And a psychotic, please key up behind him, or at least keep your hand raised there. We'll get to you in a minute. Yeah, Boy Wonder, feel free. Just jump right over him and go right through everything you just asked me there before.
Okay, can I get a mic check? Am I broadcasting now? Am I transmitting? Okay. My question was, do you think that there would have been a different strategy with a different administration, you know, than what Obama's doing right now with his administration? And if so, what do you think the strategies would have been of a different administration? And like I said, I don't like to play the blame game, you know, with, you know, the Bush administration and the things that happened with the economy before Obama even got into office. But we do have to agree that, you know, the bailouts for these large these mortar corporations and bankers, they were already in play. So do you think that there would have been a different strategy for a different you know, administration at this point in time? The mic's open.
Well, the thing about it is, yes. But whether or not that would have been possible with John McCain, I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't know. John McCain was not my big pick in the last election. As a matter of fact, he was probably at the bottom of all of our lists here of expectations. None of us as conservatives felt that John McCain stood a chance. You know, we've looked at him as a nice guy. But war hero, obviously, but still, in the end, a liberal, a progressive, so to speak. You know, so how much it would have changed? No. You know, the thing that we need to see at this point in time is, you know, before you get into any of the rest of these reforms, we gotta have tax reform more than anything else. And we gotta have some reforms going on in the Federal Reserve. Gotta cut the spending of this Congress way back. You know, and get Congress back inside of its constitutional limits. Problem is that the spending in there has just gotten so far out of hand. The amount of entitlements that are going on have gotten so far out of hand that it's crippling us. You know, we're at a point here now where we have made so many promises to so many people, and the only possible way we have of fulfilling any of these promises is by running up the tax bill, which is exactly what Obama is talking about doing right here. Now, that's this tax bill. When taxes go up, you know, you've got to look at the fact that right now there are workers all over the world that can basically pull off what we pull off here. And you got a double whammy happening in this country. A, okay, you got those high taxes, which, you know, any way you look at it, it drives jobs overseas. And then two, the fact that when you're in a period of inflation, which, you know, despite the denial that goes on, we are in here, it also raises labor rates up way beyond where it's worth it for people to stay in business in this country. So, yeah, I think a different administration. Now, I'm not going to say that the McCain administration would have done it, but a different one absolutely would have made some difference here. But it's got to be, you know, and I think that after the November in this election, you know, what we're calling the ejection election of 2010, you may see a difference. If we can get this Congress cut the federal government back into its constitutionally mandated limits. Now, you're going to hear a lot of people out there crying. You're going to hear them crying, oh, all it's going to do is raise state taxes. Well, it's only going to raise state taxes in the states that feel that, you know, the services that the federal government is now providing need to be provided to people by the government. Well, in that case, I'm sure in some states you're going to see those taxes go up or see them do whatever they're going to do. And as a result, I think you will see businesses moving out of those states and into states where that's not such a big priority. And I think that that's what you really need to see happen here. You know, more than anything else, is to see the federal government divest itself of all the the entitlements, it divest itself of spending on a lot of projects that it has no business getting into, and push it right back to the states. Allow the states to gain their sovereignty back and allow the states to decide what they're going to do. You know, see, that's the one thing about the federal government here is it overrides everybody. When they do something, it overrides all the states, all totally, completely, and whatnot. So it doesn't make a difference which one is any better. But what you start to figure out at that point in time is that, you know, look, if you're going to look at it that way, this whole country is a state. You know, it's a state of mind. I mean, it's an altered state, really, you get down to it. But it's what you see is the business leaving here and going elsewhere. You know, and that's the part that's got to stop. The drain, the brain drain on this country has got to stop. And you see your best people in this country taking off and opening up places in China or over there advising Chinese businessmen on how to operate, you know, or engineering things for the Chinese, manufacturing things for the Chinese, or helping the Chinese manufacture things for us. You got a problem. And that's the problem that's got to get solved, you know. You know, like I say, if you put it back into the realm of the states, you're going to see some states get stronger and you're going to see some states get weaker. But the states that are getting weaker will have the position of knowing that, look, what we're doing is wrong. People are leaving Michigan and moving to Texas. Well, why is that? You know, people are leaving Massachusetts and moving to Florida. Well, why is that? You want to bring these people back up to your state? You're going to have to do what they're doing in Florida. You're going to have to dump that income tax. You know, you want to do it. You want to get them back out of Texas and back up to Michigan? Well, you got to make it a more attractive climate to do business in Michigan than it is in Texas. You know, and this is what's got to happen here. You know, again, the federal government is only designed to do, you know, very, very, very few things. Basically, to secure the blessings of liberty. Beyond that, you know, its actual role in the economy has got to be minimalized. All right, Pox, you got your hand up there. And actually, well, I don't know where Psychotic went, but Pox, I'm going to flip the mic over to you. I'm sure you got a retort for all this.
No, I was just going to tell Boy Wonder I think it would have been different. First, if McCain had been president, there wouldn't have been that pork-laden, wasteful stimulus bill that Pelosi shoved in front of Obama's face and said, here's your stimulus bill. Secondly, we wouldn't have the uncertainty. There's more uncertainty. If I was a businessman, I'd be uncertain. I don't know what the health care costs are going to be because they've got that up there. You don't know what your energy costs are going to be because they're talking cap and trade. You know, if this administration hadn't been pushing health care reform and cap and trade, a lot more businesses would at least have some idea of what their costs would be. Hell, nobody, everybody's scared to invest any money figuring the federal government's just going to screw them up with a health care plan and an energy policy that's going to cost them millions and millions of dollars. So I think it would be different. I think it'd be a lot, there'd be a lot less uncertainty.
Yeah, Boy Wonder, go ahead. Take the mic.
Okay, I thank you. I thought you were going to come back up. But I think one of the, you know, it's hard to say, though, what the situation that the economy was in before, you know, the next administration had taken office. But I do agree with on one thing. Obama with his health care reform was should not have been his biggest, you know, the biggest thing on his plate when, you know, the economy is in such shambles. But I think our, you know, with the workforce and with, you know, production in America, our biggest competition is foreign workforce and, you know, corporations outsourcing. I don't think, you know, the competition is within, you know, like you said, from Florida to Texas and Texas to so forth and so on, where you can outsource into a different, you know, country and you're not, don't even necessarily have to pay, you know, medical and so forth and so on. But has America come to the point where America can't afford America? Does that make any sense? Americans can't afford America because we can't keep a workforce here in America because of healthcare, competitive waging, lifestyles that Americans are accustomed to. Have we come to that? And do we need to get some type of blue-collar workforce back in America? I think, and I think, you know, with my, I think that would be my solution, is try to get, you know, a stronger you know, blue-collar work base back in America, the Mike's Opener.
Well, you're right, but you got to understand what it is that drove that blue-collar workforce out of America to start with, all right? And it was simply the higher prices of American labor. And the thing about it was, those prices were artificially high due to inflation. That's the killer part about it all. You know, it's not so much that you got to ask yourself, is it, why is it that guy willing to work so cheap over there? It's more a question of, why is it that that Chinese guy can have a satisfying living on one-tenth of the money that we make over here? I mean, I had an interesting conversation in here the other day with somebody, you know, saying, you know, this $14 an hour ain't enough for anybody anymore. You know, how's a family going to get raised with somebody just making $14 an hour? Well, you know, he's got a point there. But stop and think about this. You know, stop and think about back in the 60s and 70s, $14 an hour, and you were screaming. Okay, you're talking making $30,000 to $35,000 a year. You know, when I was in high school, I used to pump gas for a guy who was making $30,000 a year. But the guy had a brand new Cadillac in his driveway every 2 years. Okay, he owned a split level ranch home in the suburbs. The first guy that we knew that bought a color television, a big one. You know, all kinds of things. Because back then you were rich. You know, so that's the whole problem here. It's, you know, it's not so much the question of why is it so expensive here, because it's obvious. It's inflation. I mean, that has taken us down this road. You know, and the fact that, you know, that these people in other countries aren't experiencing the same thing. Yeah, okay, maybe they're making 10% of what it is that we're making over here. But they're able to find a living on that 10% that we can't find. You know, so that's the big question. All right, Mr. Psychotic, you've had your hand up there and you've waited very patiently. I'm going to flip the mic over to you.
Well, let's be realistic for a minute. We've been living way outside of our means for the last 20 years. You know, people have been buying houses on extended credit. You know, they couldn't even pay the house off in their lifetime. We move up to this last election. You know, after we went through the 8 years of a war that's, you know, has costed us some money. You know, I mean, not an extreme amount, but it still has costed us money. And we move into, you know, Barack Obama, who is definitely a socialist when the people who surrounded him as he was coming up. Do I think that if it would have been anybody else, that it would have been the same thing? Absolutely, because it's the last ditch effort to make money. And that's what we've seen. That's what we've seen with AIG. That's what we've seen with all these banks. All the manufacturing. It's everybody trying to get the last piece of America before the whole thing collapses. And I think that's what we need to look at, you know. And ultimately, the only true solution is to do something about the Federal Reserve, because who in their right mind would consider having a currency that is regulated by a privately owned bank with an interest rate? Then I'm gonna pass the mic.
Yeah, and that was rather well put. You know, I was trying to actually avoid that subject for tonight, but there's no way you're going to get around it there. You know, when you have a central bank that is inflating the currency and deflating it, you know, per se, back and forth, this is the result. You know, this is where you end up at. You know, you end up at a point where you have a currency that's worthless, and it's everything just gets beyond, you know, what people can afford to buy. You know, which is definitely, no doubt about it, this is exactly where we're heading. All right, Mockwing, my friend. Actually, Boy Wonder was up here ahead of you, unless he let you go. But I'm going to open the mic up here, and I think Boy Wonder had his hand up next. But after that, Mockwing, hang in there.
Yeah, thank you very much. I did drop. But and at the same time, you know what you said about the housing and so on. Do we blame the consumer for the product that was being put out there? You know, you have these large, the Mac Corporation and Fannie Mae and whoever else that, you know, were building these, you know, $250,000, $300,000+ homes starting out, and that was put on the market, and they put these consumers into this mortgage situation. So are we going to blame the consumer on that? And should there have been some type of cap on the housing industry, you know, building these homes and offering this product out there for the consumer? And I think that the you know, it sounds strange, but I think that with the problem with the currency, and I think they're trying to correct it, is that it's not backed by anything. You know, the currency used to be backed by gold, but doesn't it seem strange that you see all of these gold shops and gold commercials popping up, and they're buying your gold back? Is that some type of mean to stabilize the currency situation? I mean, I know there's never going to be enough gold in Fort Knox to back the currency these days, but do you think that that this is some type of propaganda to try to put the gold back in Fort Knox and try to, you know, have the gold, I mean, the currency backed by gold again? Yeah. No, it's a way to take, you think, but then why are they trying to take our gold will be another question. The mic's open.
No. They're moving on gold because of the way gold is appreciating in value, or at least appreciating in price. Right? Its value itself actually doesn't appreciate, but the price of it will. And you're just going to see people going to town on it, because they can pay more than anybody was paying before, and they can make more on it when they turn around, melt it down, and sell it. So it's become a lucrative business, because when you get into these inflationary scares, gold always does well. People head that way, you know. But I don't think they're ever going to go back to it. Now, listen, as far as your currency being backed, all right, don't kid yourself, all right? Now, well, you know, everybody out there is going to tell you that the currency is backed by the good faith and credit of the United States of America. But the fact of the matter is, you're always going to be backed by some sort of specie. And at this point in time, the specie itself is land. All right? It is the mortgages. The biggest thing that is holding this economy together, or what it is they're using for a reserve to print that currency against, are mortgages. And as a matter of fact, you know, the federal government has mortgages in this country. At the bottom line, they are either the guarantor or the actual holder of those mortgages, which is a very, very, very scary situation. But it is those mortgages themselves that are the reserve being held for the currency. So that's the scary part about it. Now, you know, you talked about a little bit about a cap on prices of stuff. You can't really do that and still call yourself a free market. You know, although I'm going to tell you right now, we haven't had a free market for years and years and years, and it's strictly because of what Mr. Psychotic was saying here about the Federal Reserve. All right, we have gotten inflation in the housing market, which, let's face it, houses are not part of the CPI. Homes are not part of the CPI. And it has driven people crazy. And you got to take a look at something here. When you get into this sort of a cycle, all right, where the money keeps becoming cheaper and cheaper, it doesn't pay you to save money for big ticket items. 50 years ago, somebody wanted to buy a car. They saved up at least 20-25% for a down payment. Now they don't bother doing that. They just go in and finance the whole mess. You know, you would do the same thing for a home. Now you don't do that. You go in there. So it's kind of like, it's so easy to do. Plus, if you see a big ticket item, all right, there's no point in trying to save for it. You know, say, hey, you know, you take a look at something that's you want to buy that costs you $20,000, and you figure, well, it's going to take me, you know, say I'm a young guy, but I got my eye on something. It's going to take me 3 years to come up with that $20,000. Well, fact of the matter is, 3 years down the road, should you manage to get that $20,000, all right, you will not have made any interest on it, saving it in a bank. Basically, all you're going to have is that $20,000. But the price of that $20,000 article will have increased far beyond the $20,000. And you'll find yourself waiting even longer. And the wait could become interminable. And then, of course, what's the flip side of that? Well, the flip side is that you can go out and own it today and make payments on it. Now, those payments will be locked in at a price. Now, with the belief, and this is the big thing about it, is the belief that your pay will continue to climb, that your job will stay there. Obviously, it's way better for you to go out and borrow that money and have what it is that you want right away. And then stretch the payments out as far as you possibly can into the future. Because by doing that, you're going to be paying back with cheaper dollars down the road. It won't be money that you had to save to put together with this. It'll be repaying a loan. But as long as your pay continues to climb, those dollars become cheaper and cheaper. Say you're making, $30,000 a year here now, and you've bought that $20,000 a year item that's going to cost you $500 a month. By the time you get down 2-3 years down the road, you should be making $35,000 to $40,000. And, it's payments are still $500, but you will be making, you'll still have more money left over. At least that's the way the average thinking goes. Problem is it starts a frenzy of stuff, which is exactly what we've had going on here. We've had a virtual orgy of borrowing. Now, when that orgy goes on and the interest rates go down the way they did, people don't care, how much it is they got to go and borrow to buy something, and they don't even look at the prices of things. That's why your housing market has gotten way the hell out of hand. I take a look at the houses, I look at the house that I'm sitting in right here now, which has got a market value of around $300,000. Well, 15 years ago when we bought this house, we paid $95,000 for it. And I remember at the time, the people that we were buying it from was like, man, this guy made himself a bundle of money, because the people who had it before us only had it for 6 years. And they had spent $30,000 for this house. All right, this is the exact same house that I am sitting in right here now that's, reputed to be worth $300,000. Now, if you had to actually gauge that to the inflation rate over time, now, granted, I made some improvements to the house, okay? I put a new heating system in it. I put a new kitchen, new bathroom, new roof, did all kinds of landscaping, put a beautiful fence up around the place, I made it really, really nice. But still, did I take the value of this home from the $95,000 that I paid for it and jack it all the way up to $300,000? No, not at all. What it's showing you there is a reflection in how much the currency itself has actually fallen. And that's the big problem. Now it's at a point, though, that if somebody else wants to come along and buy this house for $300,000, they've got to be making a big buck. They've got to be making more than I ever could have made, Because, when it comes time for them to make the payments on this, they're going to be double what I'm paying now. Triple. So it's a catch-22 situation. Now, hopefully there's going to be a job around there that's going to pay that kind of money to somebody, and they'll be able to come in here and do this, because if not, otherwise, I could sit here and tell everybody how much I think this house is worth. But unless somebody's willing to come along and pay that price, well, it's really not worth it then, is it? All right, Mockwing, I'm sorry I held you up there, buddy. Listen, take about 5 minutes here. I think, Bob, we're going to run this into on after 10 o'clock here. Just let my producer know we're moving forward, because we got a good room cooking here tonight. Go ahead there, Mr. Mockwing.
Yeah, thanks, BB. I just want to, as you know, always reemphasize the fundamentals of supply and demand, and the physicist in me wanting to emphasize the necessity of having energy and raw materials. And I'm one that takes a look at the geopolitical situation and says, if we as the United States don't get our fundamental production and consumption again stabilized and increased and growing, especially with domestic energy, then a lot of these games that we've played with our currency aren't going to mean a whole lot anyway, because we're going to be having trouble moving around the basic necessities for life, and that's going to create a big political confugality, to say the least. And I could imagine this happening within the next 10 to 20 years, and that's right at the time whenever I would have been in my peak earning years. So it makes me really wonder about what kind of solutions that we're going to need to have in place, and I guess that opens up the discussion on our economics a little bit more and takes a look at some of the fundamental and scientific questions. And with that, I'll let them.
Yeah, well, thanks, Mark. You got a good point there, but it's once again, it's that specter of inflation that's driving it to you here. It really is. I know what you're involved in out there, which is, new energy and alternative energy production. And it's kind of like, you know, here's the big trick. You know, you may or may not come up with something good, but if you do come up with something good, will people be able to afford it? That's the big thing here. And if they can, are you going to be able to make it on it? All right, my buddy Pox, you're back up.
I hear time and time again people bring this problem on the Federal Reserve, the big bad Federal Reserve. What does the Federal Reserve do? It simply is financing the spending of the profligate Congress. Boys and girls, you can finance spending in three ways. You can squeeze it out of the people by taxing them to death. You can borrow it from foreigners and the Chinese and savers. Or you can print up the money. They're printing up the money to finance the spending. If there were no Federal Reserve, it would bank down, and you let the Congress print up its own money, what difference would it make? They'd still inflate the currency to finance their spending. Now, people, we can talk all you want about all this. It's spending that's doing this. More money than it takes in, and it finds a way to finance that. That's why the Federal Reserve is printing money, and that's why Obama whammy wants to increase taxes. It has to. This all starts with Congress and its spending. And if you Federal Reserve haters think that by abolishing the Fed and giving the authority back to the Congress to print money is going to solve the problem, you know, right. They'll just print it up to finance their spending. Until you get control of the spending, it doesn't make any difference who controls the currency. It doesn't make any difference. You're still going to have the problem that the government's going to have to finance that spending. So they can do it. Would you rather them raise taxes? They can do it. Or, you know, we can put ourselves in complete hock with the Chinese, or we can finance it by inflation. I know of no other way of financing spending. There is one way to finance spending, that's to do less of it. But until we do that, we're screwed. The mic is free.
You know, Pox, you're absolutely right for most part, but you are wrong on another one. I can't get to that right now because it's the top of the hour here. My producer's got to run a few commercials. So, folks, head on over to www.herncode.com. Take a look at the commercials over there. Take a look at some of the things that Bob's got for sale in the store. Remember, we will be right back in a few minutes after this heartbreak at the top of the hour here. Folks, listening to the Politics Cafe here on www.herncode.com. My name is Mark Belcher, and we'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com. All right, we left off here a minute ago talking about the Federal Reserve, and Pox came up with a very astute observation that you know, there's only three ways of financing the spending. And he's right up to a point. There's no doubt about it. But Pox, I'm here to tell you you're overlooking a little something here. All right? Now, there's no doubt about the fact that if Congress was to curb its spending, we would not be in the trouble that we're in today. The Federal Reserve would probably be a far sounder institution. But you got to go back and take a look at what we were spending when we got ourselves into this situation. Nowhere near the amounts that we're doing here today. All right? Back when, you know, we decided to just take it off of all silvers whatsoever, all silver, all gold, all underlying commodities. You know, what you ended up running into at that point is still an inflationary cycle. Now, that inflationary cycle, you know, now as long as you're able to keep the amount of money in the money supply somewhere near the level of goods and services, you would think, at least on paper, that it would all work out and that, you know, the money would maintain its value and everything would be okay. And had Congress, you know, not gotten off on its huge spending spree, we'd probably still be good. The only thing about it is you're putting off the eventual collapse of it down the road. You're pushing it off onto other generations. And what you got to understand is that, you know, other generations have been pushing it off onto us, and it is finally hitting its head here. Now, Congress's spending has what it's done is accelerated the inevitable. And the inevitable was exactly what's coming down the road here, or exactly what we're looking at, why you have so many people believing out there that we are on the verge of a collapse. I'm not going to say here that I totally disagree with these people. I mean, I'd love to see things keep moving the way they are, too, but, you know, how? How are they going to do that? But see, the point that you're overlooking here is this, that whoever it is that's in control of a money supply, if all they are doing is printing it, all right, look, that money goes out of that money supply in the form of loans. Those loans are expected to be paid back with interest. All right, and this is a very key thing that everybody seems to forget about here. Well, if you are the generator of that money supply, you are the printer of it, and you are lending out the money that you are printing, well, how is it that you are going to get more back with interest unless you are printing that more that you expect to get back? Now, how does that more that you expect to get back in interest from the first loans that you gave out, how are they supposed to gain interest on that and make it back? Well, they got to go out there and trade it with other people who are also being loaned money, the money that they're expecting the first group to get back with interest, and hoping they do business with each other. Now, this all might still work out, provided that you are exporting a good chunk of your economy, okay, to some other entity somewhere, okay, and that, you are making a profit that is coming in from across the seas, okay, so that you are actually taking in some other form of currency which can be exchanged for somewhere along the line and help you retire your debt. But when you're in a position where your country is only producing 30% of what it consumes, now you got a problem. You got a huge problem. And that's the eventuality that nobody seems to be able to want to face up to. You know, that's what's going on here. You know, I would refer you to a book by a very smart professor of macroeconomics. The man's name is Professor John H. Wood. And I give a shameless plug out here to an organization. It's called the American Institute of Economic Research. And you can find them on the web at AIER.org. And they've got a little book over there that's called Money. Its Origins, Developments, Debasements, and Prospects. Now, in this book, Professor Wood actually goes through the creation of money throughout history and shows you what's going on. And the thing about it is, when you have money that's based on an actual commodity, some other commodity, other than being a commodity in itself, the amount of money that's in the system is actually regulated by that commodity. Now, as Americans, as free people, as people who enjoy liberty, we should have the choice of using whatever the hell it is we want for money. All right, not just what was handed to us, by some entity and backed up by legal tender laws. All right, because when that happens, the rest of that is all taken away from you, and they have taken it upon themselves to control the money supply. But the big point that I was trying to make here is that when it's any other commodity, okay, by itself, the amount of money in its value in a marketplace, it's going to be regulated just like any other commodity by supply and demand. Now, prior to the Federal Reserve, you had boom and bust cycles when you were using silver and gold. And I am not, I don't want anybody out there to make the mistake of thinking that I want to return us to a gold standard. A gold standard was a damn stupid thing to get involved with here. You know, our Constitution actually stated both silver and gold. But the Founding Fathers had made the mistake of thinking they could regulate the prices of each of those commodities against each other, which they cannot do because commodities prices are regulated by supply and demand, by natural forces in the marketplace. But at any rate, when there wasn't enough money in the system, okay, mines would open up. People would prospect for it. Mints would go to work. Refineries would go to work. When there was too much money in the marketplace and it started to lose its value, well, the mines closed down. The mints closed down. The refineries closed down. Until it reached some point of stabilization to where its value went back up and those mines and mints were able to open back up again and produce a profit. Okay, as the value goes down, they're not making a profit. They close it down. So you have natural market forces that actually regulate the amount of currency that's in an economy. But when you've detached it from everything else, and you've made it a commodity unto itself, without any underlying value behind the notes that you are printing, well, then you get into the situation you're into today. Now, like you said there, this might be okay right at this point in time. You know, had we, had Congress cut its spending down inside of its constitutionally mandated limits. But I believe firmly that all you would be doing is putting off what we're experiencing today onto another generation or two generations down the road. Don't forget the mainstay of the, you know, the Federal Reserve's underlying reserves are the 30-year notes that it spends. You know, and 30 years is a long goddamn time. You know, and what they're hoping for is they can get to the point where, you know, in 30 years they will have realized enough of a profit to pay off the notes they've written. Well, that should have been true 30 and 60 years ago, but the fact of the matter is it's not true. And what ended up happening over the last couple of years here when these 30-year notes came due is that instead of being able to pay off those notes with interest that they earned on the loans that they made, they ended up selling more notes to other people just to pay off the notes that they wrote 30 years ago. And that's why we're in the situation we're in here today. You know, make no mistake about it. They've gotten into the Bernie Madoff scheme of things. Of course, for Bernie Madoff, it's illegal. But the Federal Reserve, nah, they're allowed to do that all they want. Nobody can audit them. Nobody can touch anything. All right, but with that, my friend Pox, I'm going to throw you the mic. You say it's not true? Well, prove it.
The Federal Reserve doesn't issue notes. The Congress issues notes. It's the Congress that's responsible for paying the interest on the notes. The Federal Reserve just buys them and monetizes their debt. The Federal Reserve doesn't have to pay any interest on any notes. The Federal Reserve earns interest on those notes and basically gives it all back to the Treasury. It's monetized debt. And it's, you know, everybody pays for the spending through inflation. That's a method of financing government. You know, and when it gets out of control, you do have a collapse when the government thinks it can finance its spending through inflation. Because everybody loses confidence in the system because you're not financing it through anything real, at least with taxes. You know, if the Congress was not running a deficit, let's say the Congress ran a $100 billion surplus. Well, as the notes came due, they could pay off the notes with interest. But they're not doing that. Every year they add to the deficit. So they have to issue new notes and roll over the old notes because, you know, the deficit, the total debt keeps on increasing. But it's the Congress that's responsible for that. To the extent the Federal Reserve monetizes the debt, Congress is free. Yeah, the Federal Reserve holds the note, they get the interest, and they write a big check to the Congress. But the American people still wind up paying for the debt. They pay for it through inflation. As I said, you can finance spending through inflation. You can finance spending through borrowing it from savers, or you can finance spending through taxes. So the idea that the Federal Reserve has to pay off the interest on notes, what notes? What notes does the Federal Reserve have to pay off interest? It's Congress that has to. The Congress issues the notes. The Federal Reserve just buys them and monetizes the debt. Next.
Well, there you have it. I mean, you said it yourself. They have monetized the debt. All right? But still, it's debt. Debt has to be paid back with interest. Okay? That debt has to be paid back with money, which means in order to generate the funds necessary in order to pay back the debt with interest, okay, you got to create more debt. And that is the problem, which is why you see that debt clock spinning out of control. I mean, this is not that complicated of a situation here. Grant you, I went along with what you said there before, as far as the debt or as far as Congress is spending. There's no doubt about the fact that if Congress was had decreased its spending, probably wouldn't be in this situation today. But the fact of the matter is that situation was coming one way or another down the road, like it or not. You know, we may have been able to put it off for ourselves, okay? But all we were doing is shouldering a future generation with that debt, okay? They're either going to have to produce more, okay, which, you know, granted before, productivity increases obviously are going to help this, all right? But the fact of the matter is, in order to really do this, you've got to have, in order for it to work, okay, you have got to have a net trade imbalance that is in your favor, you know, where you are exporting more than you're importing. It's the only way it could possibly work, you know, but it's not, because we are not, okay? We are not exporting more than we are importing. As a matter of fact, just the opposite is true, you know, which is why we are running into this, because in order to pay for things, we've got to generate more debt, and they got to make that money cheaper out there so that everybody, you know, they got to figure out a way to make people do this. That money is cheap, and even Ben Franklin saw way back when that when money is cheap, the prices of real estate and other items go up. You know, now he had the idea that it was worth more back then. Well, it's worth more in dollars, but what's actually happening here is the dollars are all worth less. So it's a catch-22 situation that you're pointing at here, you know. And as Mr. Bumbledore had quite pointed out there in text, you know, Congress was only ever supposed to be, you know, the arbiter of weights and measures here. I'll tell you, the biggest problem that Congress had, and this is no doubt, which is what brought us to the Federal Reserve in the get-go, is the fact that they had tried to stamp gold coins against the silver coins. You know, a standard, by definition, is a single item by which other things are measured. All right? When they tried to stamp gold coins in the $20 value, okay, against the $1 silver coin, they tried to create a double standard. All right? Now, a double standard is an oxymoron. All right, it's a redundancy. It's a conflict of interest. You can't have either one's going to be a standard or the other's going to be a standard. When you have a double standard, what that means is that you have no standard. All right, that's the big point that I'm trying to make right here. All right, but when you have one single standard, other things can roll around against it. See, if they were smart and they had only ever minted those gold coins as 1 ounce of gold and allowed them to float at market prices, the bankers would have been able to satisfy their needs much better, and the people who were dealing with silver and copper and nickel and other coins of baser value would have found their needs met at a much better standard too. All right, and you would have seen far less inflation. The inflation that would have been going on there would have been the value of that gold going up and whatnot, and it would have been suffered more by the elite than more than the common people. But once you get yourself into this situation where you're at right here now, okay, the common people are the ones that end up bearing the brunt out of it, while the elite get their asses covered. All right, Mr. Psychotic, you got the mic. It's all yours.
Yeah, I'm just wondering when people stopped asking questions, you know. When did they stop asking questions of the Federal Reserve? Say, hey, you know, first of all, you're supposed to be a voluntary agency, and yet you're forcing us to pay taxes. Income taxes for, if we don't, then we get in trouble for that. But it's supposed to be a voluntary tax. Please, you know, why are we not holding these people to the fire? Why are we not asking them the pertinent questions? Okay, because the bottom line is, that's where the problem comes from. The problem stems from the Federal Reserve. Now, you know, they're the ones creating inflation. They're the ones devaluing the dollar. They're the ones, no matter where else you would choose to push the blame, it always ends up back at the Federal Reserve. So until we really deal with the Fed, nothing's going to change. Even if we do come out of that, it's like putting a Band-Aid on an amputation. You know, it only works for a few minutes. Go ahead, Unit.
That's ridiculous. The Federal Reserve does nothing but finances the spending of the Congress. You know, when the Federal Reserve goes out and buys those treasury bills and inflates the currency, why are they out there in the first place? Because the damn Congress spends more money than it takes in. To blame the Federal Reserve is ridiculous. You can abolish it tomorrow. The Constitution says the Congress has the power to coin, power to coin money and regulate its value. So you're going to have the people spending the money also deciding how much money to print. How is that any better than what we've got now? You blame the Federal Reserve for what? For doing what the politicians want it to do, which is to finance their spending. If the spending wasn't there, and there were fewer and fewer treasury notes out there, which is nothing but the treasury borrowing the money to finance the spending the Congress orders. The Federal Reserve wouldn't be able to print out money because they got to buy those things to do it. So to blame the Federal Reserve is really ridiculous. Because if the Federal Reserve didn't exist, the Congress would do the same thing. They'd just do it directly. You know, other countries have the same problem when the central bank is controlled completely by the government or completely by the legislature. It's interesting you talk about this independent monetary authority as being a bad thing, and yet the Germans set theirs up that way because they knew they couldn't trust the politicians to print the money. In Germany, set up one of the most independent central banks around simply for that reason. And Germany knew about what caused inflation. They knew it wasn't a central bank. It was the politicians, and the central bank is just doing their bidding. You know, as I said, you know, if you want all these goodies, you're going to have to pay for them by raising taxes or by finding somebody to borrow it. But if you borrow the money, you just get poorer and poorer. Like BB says, you know, as long as you consume more than you produce and you borrow the money to finance the difference, every year you get poorer and poorer. Next.
Well, you're right, but that's exactly why it was set up to begin with, you know, so that could happen. You know, and it was only supposed to really happen in times of need. They really did that because of the war, you know, more than anything else. Well, I mean, the war was the next thing that followed on the heels of it, if you think about it, the war to end all wars, you know, but they did definitely wanted to have something there to be able to finance wars should they come down the road. But, you know, still in the end, what they have ended up with here is exactly what you're talking about. Now, grant you, okay, you know, the Treasury is the one that obviously that issues all of these notes that they're expecting to get back with interest. But by the same token, what is it that they're lending out with their notes? Or what is it that they're taking in? They're still just taking in other notes, all right? And that's the problem with it, all right? There's still nothing of substance down underneath of it. Well, there is. See, and that's the point. That's the dirty little secret here, is that something of substance is indeed, in fact, right now, specie, which is land. All right, there's always specie. I'm going to tell you something. There's business laws that go back under the common law that go forever. And make no mistake about that. You know, if you understand what the common law is. And one of those common law business laws are the fact that there is no contract. There is no negotiation or anything unless, or there's actually no... no exchange, or nothing has happened. No deal has happened, and nothing is binding unless specie trades hands. All right? This is an honest to God's fact. It's like right now, you go into a car dealer. You sit down and tell that guy, yeah, I'm going to buy this car. I'll sign all the paperwork right now. Well, unless you've given him something down, you don't have anything. You ain't got nothing, okay? You could have signed a purchase order, and you could have signed all the agreements and everything else, but until you have paid $1 towards everything here, you really don't have a deal. You don't have something that will stand up in court, believe it or not. And every car dealer knows this, which is why they demand that you put something down on it. Because if you have, you know, even if it's $50, $100, whatever, a consideration, that's the word I'm looking for, exactly right there, Pox. All right, unless there is some consideration that goes on here, you got nothing. Well, the fact of the matter is, everybody thinks that, you know, when they're doing something with nothing down and everything else, that really they got nothing. If you lose, you lost nothing. But the fact of the matter is, you know, you really, at the bottom of this, do have that land. You know, and despite its dollar value, it is what it is, what it is. You know, and that's the big point about it. You gotta understand something about land. They're not making any more of it. You know, nobody is out there right now raising islands up out of the ocean where people can live and grow produce and live normal, happy lives. There's only so much land to go around. The population itself keeps on getting larger. So obviously the value of that land is going to go up and up and up. And this is what it is that they're all banking on. But the fact of the matter is, as long as you're printing currency against it, the way we are, okay, and against the future of these of this land being paid off, you got to have some sort of an economy that's going to be able to support this. Well, what you don't. Takes us right back to where we were at the beginning of the program here tonight. All right, what is it it's going to take to bring businesses back into this country, you know, to get things moving? You know, we've been very self-destructive of these efforts here. And we got Obama in here acting even more and more self-destructive at this point in time. You know, talking about raising taxes on corporations, raising taxes on the rich, raising taxes on fossil fuels. Things of this nature are not conducive to improving the economy of this country. Not at all. You know, what they are conducive of is increasing the economies of other countries because people are going to leave here and go elsewhere. You know, which is exactly what we see. All right, at any rate here, it's Pox, I got 3 minutes left to the show here tonight, so I'm going to flip it over to you and grab it up.
Well, some radical by the name of Adam Smith once wrote something called an Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations. And what he observed is something people should understand. It's not how much specie you have, how much land you have. It's the productivity of the people that determines the wealth of nations. It's the ability to satisfy needs. You know, and anybody that's looked at productivity knows that, you know, you can own a piece of land, but with imagination and technology, that land can produce more and more and more and more and more. With, you know, good division of labor, you can produce more and more. It's productivity. It's ability to satisfy needs that determines the wealth of nations, not how much gold and silver you got or how much this or that or you got or... No, not even how much debt you're in. You know, if you're in hock, but you're producing. I mean, producing a lot and exporting a lot of things. It's financeable. You're making progress, but you know, that's something people have to understand. Wealth is determined by productivity, and productivity is a lot more than physical things. Because you know, I can give you example. You know, if it were just land and resources and gold and everything, Russia would be very wealthy and Japan would be very poor. So there's something else at work here, and Adam Smith knew it.
Well, I would totally agree with you there, Pox. Productivity. The thing about it is we've got to provide that incentive for the productivity. We've got to bring it back because that is what we've lost. No, you hit a big nail right on the head right there. You know, but when you are in a situation where you see that productivity is actually being punished, well, then, you know, let's face it, that progressive income tax being the number one thing on top of that, you know, it's really there's your biggest killer right on top of it, progressive income tax, because it does, it squashes productivity, you know, and provide, you got to provide an incentive. You know, the incentive was always there that if you weren't working, you had to do something. You had to go out there and be productive. You had to produce things before you could consume them. But we're not in that state anymore. You know, matter of fact, it was, you know, part of what I read there before. Millions and millions of more dollars heading out, you know, to help people who are on unemployment. Well, that sounds fine. You know, but here you have, what you have done is created, you know, producers or consumers who are producing absolutely nothing. You know, now what is it that they are consuming? Well, they are consuming the future, because all of this money that they are consuming today is money that's being promised to them by some future generation that hasn't even been born yet. And that's, you know, it's a catch-22, and it's a bad situation. It's a very big catch-22 here. At any rate, though, we have hit the top of the show. I'm going to wrap it up here. My voice is actually taking another big dump. But we'll be back. We'll be back next week, Monday night, same bat time, same bat channel. But it's time to close up the cafe here. Once again, waitresses are all piling the tables up high with the chairs. The lights are going dim. The maitre d's got everything all locked up. He's doing himself a fine job, and he's been pushing for a raise. And I don't know how the hell we're going to give him a raise. I don't know, I'm going to have to figure out some other kind of perks, because there ain't much money to go around. That's for damn sure. But I got to figure out something to keep them here. But at any rate, as always, the cafe be closed, but the bar will be open. And, yeah, we'll keep PL4 open here for a little while longer, allow people to talk, to chat, have things cooking. But I want to say goodnight from the Berkshires here in Massachusetts and from my producer out in Hawaii. Folks, you've listened to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com. Don't forget all the rest of the shows here are lined up at Hernco, the golf show, and all the rest of the good ones, the automotive show, and other things. There are some new ones coming up here. February is proving to be, I think, it's going to be a good month for Hernco. We might have a couple more shows starting. But, folks, I want to say once again, good night from the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com. I'm your host. My name is Mark Belcher, and we'll see you next week.